for AntiWar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. This is AntiWar Radio. I'm in Los Angeles, and I believe my guest, Syed Salim Shahzad, reporter for the Asia Times, is in Pakistan. Is that right, sir?
That's true. That's true. I'm in Pakistan, Islamabad.
Okay. Well, sounds like we got a pretty good connection for all the way on the other side of the world. Welcome to the show. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, very, very little time delay and everything. Sounds good. All right. So I have a lot of things I'd like to ask you about, but the first thing is this article from October the 30th, 2002. It was sent to me by somebody, I think it was a link posted in the comment section on one of these interviews, and it's an article about how Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was killed in a shootout with Pakistani police during a raid back in 2002. Which I guess would imply that the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed we've heard about ever since then is somebody else. And I just wonder whether there have been more follow-ups to this article, whether you've developed this story, whether you still stand by this story, or further information has made it clear otherwise, or what is the deal nowadays in 2010?
Well, the thing is that that article was spent in, you know, in 2002, and that perspective was an ISI raid on a residence in Karachi on the first anniversary of 11th September 2002. In the same raid, they arrested Ramzi Binil Ship. So when There was a long exchange of gunfire between the Pakistani security forces and Al Qaeda, and after that, I mean, they arrested Ramzi Binil Ship, and they killed a couple of other people over there. So my sources told me that when they went there, they found a body over there, and some Americans who were FBI agents, they spotted one dead body as Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. That was it, and they told me about that they suspected Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was killed in that encounter. Later on, I mean, that information turned out to be wrong, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was arrested. So, I mean, I wrote another article when he was arrested, that information was based on some intelligence sources, because you see, the thing is that in the war on terror, everything was is discreet, and the reporters don't have the access to the information. So they have to rely on the intelligence agents, and at that time, intelligence agents pass on the information not only to me, to other media outlets as well, that they suspect that the person killed in that encounter on September 11, 2002 was one of the dead body belonged to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. So that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you know how it is and how it's been all these years. The American government had such incentive to lie and obfuscate and cover up how much they knew and how easily they could have prevented the attack if only they'd been doing their jobs, whether or not they were failing to do their jobs deliberately is a question that's debated a lot. And articles like this one are cited, continuously, and it's been left up to not just alternative journalists, but even just regular people to try to figure out what happened on September 11th, since our government wouldn't tell us. And so there's all this muddy water out there. And this article that you wrote back then has been included and is still used to say, see, this whole thing is a sham. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has been dead since 2002, and they don't just lie to you about some things. They're lying to you about everything.
Well, as a reporter, my take is that yes, I mean, indeed, I mean, there is a lot of murky water in this whole thing, and I mean, the governments and the states have been, you know, trying to shove everything under the carpet. But you see, the thing is that as far as this article is concerned, I clarified after the arrest of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed that that article was based on some wrong information, and I clarified that. And I as a reporter, because you see, it, later on I had access to the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's family in Karachi, Pakistan. So, I mean, I could, you know, they not only to me, but to other reporters, including some American journalists. And those people, I mean, of course, I mean, clarified that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the person who was arrested by the Americans, was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
So, well, and please forgive me, because I don't mean to beat you over the head with it. I mean, it's possible for a reporter to get something wrong and then make a clarification later. I'm sorry that I didn't see the clarification. There ought to be a link to it on the Asia Times original story here, maybe. But I understand that, I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm just saying it's one of these things that continues to circulate around. So I'm really happy to have a chance to let you address it on this show. But also, you know, as long as we're talking about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I was wondering, because I've seen where you've written a little bit here about Jundallah, this Balaki terrorist group that it's been reported by, well, a few different people, I think including Andrew Coburn and Seymour Hersh, that the CIA and or the Joint Special Operations Command has been financing these guys and controlling them and using them as, you know, to commit terrorist attacks or supporting their terrorist attacks against Iran. And then isn't it the case that this is actually Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's group, this Jundallah?
No. Well, there is a misunderstanding on part of the Western media, especially, that there are two Jundallahs, basically. One Jundallah was founded in South Waziristan, and that Jundallah belonged to Al-Qaeda. The another Jundullah was Iranian Jundullah, and that was belonged to Abdul Malik Reghi. And that is completely separate, you see.
Well, but I thought Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi Youssef were Balukis, and that they were from that kind of southwestern part of Pakistan,
of
right?
Of course, I mean, they come from Pakistani Balochistan, but their Jundullah was founded. The Jundullah I talked about was formed in Pakistani, South Waziristani tribal areas. And that Jundullah carried out the attack on the Pakistani military convoy in 2004 on the Corps Commander's motorcade in Karachi.
So these really are very separate groups from each other.
These are completely separate. They are completely apart from each other. The Iranian Jundullah was completely different, and the Jundullah from South Waziristan was completely different. And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed belonged to... I mean, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was involved with the Jundullah of South Waziristan, not the Iranian one.
Okay. Well, can you tell us about the one that he wasn't a member of that has been carrying out the attacks in Iran? Do you know about them?
You mean the Iranian Jundullah?
Right. Well, I guess my understanding was they kind of straddled the border of the two states there.
The region
of Baluchistan was bigger than, or, you know, didn't conform to the borderline.
Yeah, as far as South Waziristani Jundullah is concerned, its operation was only Pakistan focused, and the Iranian Jundullah was actually, you know, aiming for Iranian targets only. So they are two separate operations altogether.
I see. Well, do you know whether, like, ideologically, are they basically the same? My impression was that the Jundallah that America's government is accused of supporting against Iran, whether or not it was the same group as Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, are basically ideological cousins of the Bin Ladenites.
No. I tell you, I mean, tell you about the Iranian Jundullah. Iranian Jundullah was initially a separate Iranian Baloch separatist group, and it was, you know, led by Abdul Malik Reghi. Abdul Malik Reghi was an Iranian Baloch who was initially a Baloch nationalist, and he also worked for the Baloch Liberation Organization as well. And he changed many colors in the past. I mean, at one time he was a Baloch nationalist, and another when he came to Karachi and Pakistan, you know, he came close to Sipahi Sahabai, an Islamic anti-Shiite group. So Later on, I mean, he developed ties with the Sipahi Sabha's breakaway faction, that is Lashkar-e-Jangvi, and Lashkar-e-Jangvi had some loose connections with Al-Qaeda. So, but the thing is that Lashkar-e-Jangvi and Abdul Malik Reghi were both against the Shias. And, you know, that Iran is predominantly a Shia country. So they had a common interest. So they, you know, joined strategies to carry out actions against against the Iranians inside, you know, Iran. In the meantime, what I learned from my sources, and I also documented that in my article as well, that in 2009, Lashkar-e-Jangvi members, you know, got Abdul Malik Reghi, got a meeting, arranged a meeting with Abdul Malik Reghi to some Al-Qaeda members in the Pakistani Balochistan area. And in that meeting, I mean, they agreed that both organizations would facilitate each other. For example, Al-Qaeda required somebody in Iran who would facilitate their members to go to Turkey and to Iraq through Iran. And Abdul Malik Reghi was, you know, very much involved in his smugglings in the past, and he knew the smuggling routes through Iran, so he agreed that he would, you know, facilitate the Al-Qaeda members, and in return he would receive the money from Al-Qaeda. And he expected Al-Qaeda to support Iranian Jundullah's operation inside Iran. So that was an understanding, but the thing was that later on Abdul Malik Reghi was arrested by the Iranian authorities, and that arrest was facilitated by the Pakistani establishment. Mm-hmm. So, they could not materialize any alliance between Iranian Jundullah and Al-Qaeda. It was some sort of an arrangement because both organizations were working underground, and somehow there were some go-betweens between the two organizations, which, I mean, they both trusted on. So they developed some kind of arrangement, but that again, I mean, came only in 2009, not before that.
I see. All right, everybody, I'm talking with Syed Salim Shahzad. Am I saying that right at all, sir?
True.
Okay, good. He's on the phone from what city in Pakistan are you in?
I'm in Islamabad, in the Pakistani capital, Islamabad.
Okay, and he's a reporter from the Asia Times, and I'm learning all kinds of things. Here's one from BostonReview.net. The real danger is that Al-Qaeda and the Neo-Taliban will drag the United States into regional war. What is the Neo-Taliban?
Well, the Neo-Taliban is a new generation of the Taliban who actually absorbed Al-Qaeda's ideology. I mean, they are from the local population, Pakistani population. They are from Afghan population, and they might be from, you know, if they come from South Asia, they might be coming from different tribes of Afghanistan and Pakistan. But they absorbed Al-Qaeda's ideology. They are not Arabs, but they still absorb their ideology in all letter and spirit, and they are practicing their strategy. That's why I call them Neo-Taliban.
Well, it's very interesting the way you say in this article that the American war in Afghanistan, in destroying much of the Taliban and forcing the survivors across the border, made them dependent on the Egyptians and the Saudi friends of Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri in order to help them to wage their resistance, at least in terms of strategy and this kind of things. Neo-Taliban sounds right, like they got their own little AEI over there, their own little war party controlling these guys. And so now, after years of fighting, these Pakistani locals, as you say, have ended up becoming very Al-Qaedaized in their ideology after depending on the Al-Qaeda guys to help them all this time.
That's true. I mean, the more Taliban leadership is being eliminated in this war, the lower cadre is more, you know, inclined towards Al-Qaeda, because they require guidance, they require strategy, they require financing, and Al-Qaeda is providing all those things to them. And more their leadership would be eliminated, Al-Qaeda would more be in a controlling position to these Taliban in South Asia.
Well, and you say in this article that they have this strategy of trying to pick a fight, a real fight, I guess, in Kashmir between Pakistan and India in order to draw America into a much bigger conflict rather than just bogging us down and bleeding us dry with guerrilla warfare. Why not go ahead and have a big war, they figure, huh?
Well, the thing is that I did not mention Kashmir. Actually, Al-Qaeda was aiming to expand the war theater up to India, and they want to engage India in this conflict. And the Mumbai attack was actually a bid to expand the war theater. Because, you see, the thing is that if India and Pakistan were engaged in any conflict, the first thing which would happen is the naval blockade by the Indian Navy in the Arabian Sea. And the first casualty of that blockade would be the NATO supply line, which, because the thing is that NATO supply line goes through Pakistan to the landlocked Afghanistan. And if Indian Navy, make a naval blockade of the Arabian Sea, NATO would never be able to, send the supplies through Pakistan. And that would greatly affect the war in Afghanistan. The second thing is that, of course, if India and Pakistan engage in any conflict, Pakistan's support and Pakistan's allegiance to the American war in Afghanistan would be automatically neutralized. It would have to pull out its troops from the eastern border and from its western border and relocate to the eastern border near India. So that way, Americans would completely lose their grip on their war in Afghanistan. Because, you see, the militants in Afghanistan would conveniently cross the border inside Pakistan, and there would be nobody to prevent them, because all the Pakistani forces would be engaged in a war against India. So that was Al-Qaeda's plan, and because of that, they hatched the Mumbai plot, because Mumbai attack would antagonize India and it would attack Pakistan. But you see, what happened was that Americans immediately intervened and prevent India to go against any adventurism against Pakistan.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you say in here too that the leaders of this thing, when we hear the Karzai government and the Obama governments both in different ways and on different timelines, but talking about negotiating with the Taliban and trying to work something out and come to some sort of agreement and bring them into the government one way or the other, either as groups, as Karzai wants, or as individuals, as Obama would prefer it. You're saying in this article that you cannot deal with these guys, with Haqqani and with Hekmatyar, that these guys are... Well, it just seems like the only way that America could ever leave there, according to the way it's set up now, would be to say that, well, we made a deal and we made peace, we achieved victory, and so now we can go, kind of thing. But you're saying that in your article here, I believe, that the people that we're fighting against, led by the Haqqanis, this neo-Taliban, that they are irreconcilable to the Karzai government, to the American occupation, that they will never, that we are not in a position to deal with them, basically, right?
Well, the thing is that's true. The minute Americans would, Americans would move out of Afghanistan, of course, they would initiate their global, Al-Qaeda would initiate its global operation, and they would insist on re-establishing their Islamic Emirates. They would never allow democracy to flourish in Afghanistan. They would never allow any elections to take place. They would never allow any other groups, including Northern Alliance and other groups, to be the part of the government. They would insist on their regime, their student militia, Taliban, to come back and control everything in Afghanistan and reestablish their emirates, and they would continue to protect Al-Qaeda and would allow them, you know, to operate through.
Well,
because you see, their vision of war, the vision of war is not limited up to Afghanistan. They are looking for the liberation of Palestine, you know, and this is very much part of their ideology as well as their strategy, that once they would finish with Afghanistan, they would send the armies to fight with Israel and to liberate the Palestine. So I mean, that would go on, and that way I think that it is, they are irreconcilable.
Well, so if I understand you right, what you're saying is that, well, for example, reporting that says that the Taliban have had it with Al-Qaeda, and if the Taliban did have an opportunity to take power in Afghanistan, that they wouldn't blow it again by helping the Saudi and Egyptian people who are at war with the United States there. You're saying that that's wrong, that at this point they've been pushed so close together that the Al-Qaeda, there's no question that Al-Qaeda would be welcome by the Taliban in Afghanistan to use that as a base of operations for further war against the West. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if the Americans leave Afghanistan, Taliban,
right,
would, you know, revive their emirates, their government, and their Islamic system in Afghanistan immediately, and would continue to protect the Al-Qaeda members, and would allow them to operate in Afghanistan against the Western targets.
Has it been that way unendingly since September 11th? Was there a period of time there when the Taliban might have really been willing to give up all the Saudis and Egyptians if you just leave us alone, kind of thing? You know, before September 11th, Al-Qaeda was welcomed there by Mullah Omar and the Taliban. And then September 11th and a giant war happened. And now you're saying again that if America left there and the Taliban ruled the place, that they would allow Al-Qaeda to be there. But what I'm wondering is, was there ever a time where we could have cut a deal with them that said, look, just give us Al-Qaeda and we'll let you be the Taliban? I mean, it sounds like you're saying it's too late for that now, but was there ever a time that would have worked, is the question.
Why they would hand you over to Al-Qaeda? Why they would hand Americans over Al-Qaeda? If they had that kind of intentions, they would have handed over Osama bin Laden to Americans in first place. So they are not willing to, you know, give up. They would never compromise on Al-Qaeda. They would continue to protect Al-Qaeda. They would continue to provide them all sort of bases over there. And they don't have any intentions to, you know, cut a deal with Americans on that.
Well, that's a bummer, because it sounds like a prescription for America has to stay forever. Even though we can't eliminate the enemy, we can't leave, because we'll be right back where we were in the summer of 01 again.
That's true.
Right. I'm sorry. I really appreciate your time on the show today. I hope we can do this again often. I've learned a lot, and I have a ton more follow-up questions, but I've got to move on to my next interview. But thank you very much for your time on the show. I hope we can stay in touch. Okay, everybody. That was Syed Salim Shahzad. He writes for the Asia Times.